You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. You're listening to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for subscribing on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, or in Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. Closing out the series of the best games of the 2019-20 season. Gone over some pretty exciting wins over for Miami over the last couple of episodes. Make sure to download the parts one and two of that, as well as my honorable mentions. This is the fourth of the series, and this one is going to start off focusing on a 122-108 win on January 8th at Indiana over the Pacers. This was a big win for Miami for a number of reasons. One, again, it was the Pacers, even though Indiana was once again shorthanded without Victor Oladipo and Malcolm Brogdon. Miami was going up against an Eastern Conference contender. They had also been struggling of late. They had been struggling on the road in particular, something that we would see from them more and more at this point in the season. They were establishing themselves as a very, very good, or had established themselves as a very good home team, but going on the road was always a challenge, and they had dropped some games there where they probably shouldn't have, specifically against the inferior opponents. They lost to the Grizzlies, Magic, and arguably the worst game of the season, a loss to the Washington Wizards on the road recently before leading up into this Pacers game on January 8th. And so there were concerns about whether or not Miami was capable of finding any kind of consistency on the road, being the same kind of team that we saw from them at home. If you recall last episode, I talked about a home back-to-back set against the Pacers and 76ers where they just found a way to win. They were resilient on the road. This was the exact opposite of that. They always found a way to give up huge leads, to crumble against even worse opponents, like I said. So the Wizards game in particular had been a really, really bad moment for Miami, at least in my opinion, in that they gave up some incredible scoring opportunities to players that were basically very fringe NBA players. Not to knock on them, you know, specifically, because any player in the NBA is a very good player, capable of putting up points on any given night. But still, it was a bad loss that should never have happened. We weren't sure whether or not Miami might be a legitimate contender at this point because they were struggling so much. But they found a way to get up for a big game against the Pacers, even though they were somewhat shorthanded again. And this one was notable because of a fight between Jimmy Butler and TJ Warren. If you recall that game specifically, Butler had driven to the hoop. Warren fouled him, and Butler took some exception to that and continued jawing and so forth, back and forth, between a player who, in my opinion, had always been much of a role player struggling with the Phoenix Suns. He kind of overachieved a little bit during his games in Indiana this year, but I never really considered him to be much of a good player. But either way, he felt like he was... he feels like he's a lot better a player than he actually is, and so just decided to go up against several-time All-Star in Jimmy Butler. Warren then drew a foul on Butler. I remember it was at the top of the wing there. Butler had the ball in his hands, and he kind of threw his shoulder a little bit unnecessarily at TJ Warren there. Got called for the offensive foul right away. And then Warren clapped his hands at the referee's decision, and he did so demonstrably that he earned his second technical foul after that initial fight had taken place between them and he was getting ejected. Of course, there was some more jawing back and forth as Warren was getting tossed out of the game. Some very colorful language there. And after the game, Jimmy had this to say about Warren.
What sort of made it so chippy all of a sudden out of just like the one foul?
To me, I think it's tough for him because I can guard him and he can't guard me. Like at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. But like I said, I think you just got to watch your mouth in certain situations. There's some that you just don't say as a man. And he got to see me the next time because I feel like what he said was truly disrespectful. And it's all good because we see him again. I ain't scared of nobody. So, you know, he's talking about, oh, we're going to fight this, that. It is what it is to me.
And then what did you notice the middle finger from him, and was the blowing of the kiss?
He's soft. He's not even in my fucking league, like nowhere near me. And if I was their coach, I would never put him on me ever again. He's like, no, put somebody else on me because I'm a Taz every time we play. So he's trash.
That was, again, a very, very colorful opportunity for Jimmy Butler to kind of just, you know, he apparently is not a fan of TJ Warren, and it was going to be an interesting matchup there. I think the next day he had some things to say via Twitter or Instagram in particular. He showed the next matchup against the Pacers, one that he was circling on his calendar. Unfortunately, Miami would wind up not being able to play that game. But it was this game in January was contentious. It was fun, and Miami found a way to frankly beat Indiana quite badly, a 14-point win over the Pacers. Just really fun. From Adebayo's perspective, he also wound up outplaying Miles Turner. I saw a piece later on from Barry Jackson where, you know, he seemed to think that this was somewhat purposefully done by Bam Adebayo, outplaying a guy in Turner who had made the USA select team that had lost the world championships in China earlier that summer in 2019. And so it's just interesting. That seems like a whole other, again, a lifetime ago, considering everything we've gone through since then. But, you know, Bam having gotten kicked off the Team USA select group, and then, you know, maybe he still had some animosity towards Turner and others that had made the team. I still think it was the right decision. Look, Adebayo, for all that we have loved his game and his overall ability and things of that sort, he seemed like a good fit for Team USA, but he didn't really stand out in any way. And so I think it made a lot of sense for him not to have made that team. He did seem like he was going to be, you know, a good fit, but it just never worked out that way. And of course, now you could always, hindsight is 2020. You could always look back and say, well, he would have been the perfect fit, a guy who could defend a number of positions, who can get to the rim easily, who can collect rebounds, just a good overall player, obviously, and, you know, wound up making an all-star team this year. So maybe getting canned from Team USA was the kind of impetus that he needed, the opportunity for him to kind of find his game, refocus, and things of that sort. But either way, against Indiana, he wound up outplaying Turner pretty considerably there. This game is notable for a couple of things. Aside from that fight between Butler and Warren, it also would wind up representing Justice Winslow's last active game with the Miami Heat, at least this season. Justice had come back on and off, and he had struggled to find a way back into the rotation. And, you know, there seems to be some questions as to whether or not his injury was more severe than it actually was, or less severe, at least from the Heat's perspective. Either way, he was available in this game and not a significant factor, didn't really do much against the Pacers. Wound up playing 16 total minutes, 0 of 2 from the field. And so we're starting to question now whether or not we'll ever see a healthy Justice Winslow and what kind of impact he could have. I remember recording a show right around this time saying, you know, I didn't know what Justice's role in this team was. And I wasn't quite sure that he'd ever find a role in this team. It's somewhat debatable and hard to argue as to whether or not Justice would have been able to find a place on his team with Jimmy and Bam playing at the same level, at the high level that they were. Either way, though, you know, for this was his last game and not a good one for Justice. A tough end to what was an up-and-down career in Miami. Lost within all this context is that Domantas Sabonis had a huge game, leading all scorers with 27 points. Again, at this point, all-star selections hadn't been made, so you could argue that Sabonis may have been a little bit more polished offensively than Adebayo. And so from Pacers fans' perspective, maybe they thought that Domantas was the better all-star. It's quite possible. But either way, I still think that Bam Adebayo, if you recall an episode I recorded with Tony East of Locked On Pacers a lifetime ago, but it was just a few weeks ago, talking about a potential matchup between the Pacers and Heat. He actually thinks that Adebayo is a better player, and I think that's fair. He's a better overall, all-around player than Sabonis is, who might just be a more polished scorer than Bam. Either way, six Heat players scored at least 15 points, and one Butler scored 14, so almost seven players with 15 points. Just a big overall game from the Heat, finding their way offensively, and perhaps a little pissed off at what had happened in the last few games, losing to inferior opponents, and just looking for somebody, a scapegoat in TJ Warren, and he was perfect for the opportunity because he certainly he took the bait, and he was outmatched. So just interesting, a question as to what would have happened, not just when the two teams met later on in the season, the regular season in March, but what would have happened if these two teams had faced each other in the playoffs. We might never know. starting to seem more and more likely that the season will not resume anytime soon, although reports have already come in that certain cities, if government local governments allow any kind of open facilities and things of that sort, that NBA teams will be able to allow their training facilities to open up to players. So that's somewhat tricky. Again, not real clear as to what that means and where these things will be able to take place, because not only is it a matter of local government having these kind of things in place, but then the teams have to consider, you know, if you have two or three teams in cities like, say, Atlanta or Miami, where governments probably should be a little bit more cautious and are taking chances by allowing these facilities to open up. Other facilities in, say, San Francisco or Portland or others probably will stay shut down, and so that creates an unfair edge and advantage. That seems something atypical for the NBA. They don't want to create those kind of unfair advantages, especially in a situation as tricky and sensitive as this. So I'm not quite sure what will happen, and I don't know exactly if Miami will wind up facing the Pacers at any point later on this season, or if the season will resume at all. But either way, this was a great win. It was good to see that kind of energy from Butler, a guy who just refuses to back down from an opponent. And it was just a lot of fun. So good to kind of take this stroll down memory lane and remember this fun, antagonistic series, because the Pacers have always been a very good opponent, a team that always seems to get the best out of Miami, and that Miami always seems to have an answer for one way or the other. But coming up next, I'll talk about a signature win over a very, very good team, perhaps the best win of the season. You're listening to Locked On Heat. So this game's a little different. This one takes place on March 2nd, so already a month and a half has passed from my previous game there, but a lot has happened in that, not just the All-Star break where Bam Adebayo and a number of Heat players are featured, but the fact that it's also post the trade deadline, where Miami has jettisoned by this point Dion Waiters, James Johnson, and Justice Winslow in exchange for Andre Iguodala, Jay Crowder, and Solomon Hill. So you're seeing yet a different version of this team yet again, where Iguodala is kind of figuring out his role in this team, a little bit older. Jay Crowder has become a fan favorite because of his incendiary shooting once he joined Miami. Solomon Hill, not quite as much of a factor at this point, although he would wind up playing a few games for Miami. He did wind up playing against the Milwaukee Bucks, but this was a great win for Miami, because following their scorching hot start, Miami had tapered off a bit. They were giving up big leads. They were struggling on the road. They just seemed to have, they were just a different version of this team. We weren't quite sure what version of this team they would be, especially after the All-Star break too. Remember, Jimmy Butler was also nursing an injury there. Tyler Hero and Myers Leonard were both injured. So we weren't quite sure whether or not this team would kind of get back to that form from earlier in the season. We weren't really sure what they would do against a quality opponent like the Milwaukee Bucks. Milwaukee was playing on a second night of a back-to-back set, but they had been 8-0 prior to this matchup going against teams on the second night of a back-to-back. So it's not like that was really a challenge. I know a lot of Bucks fans kind of said, oh, well, they were somewhat tired, etc. Not really a legitimate excuse, I think. But either way, Miami certainly had an answer for the Bucks early on. I think what really makes this game stand out and why it was such a signature win, perhaps the best win of the season, was that it just really created the template on how to guard Giannis Antetokounmpo. Keep him out of the paint. Challenge him at every opportunity. Be physical with him. Make things difficult for him. And Miami was able to implement that strategy perfectly. They had a number of players go up against Giannis Antetokounmpo to just really, again, build a wall between him and the basket, and it worked. Antetokounmpo had no option at some point but to try and get to score from the perimeter. He was kind of testing his range a little bit there. It was a really, really great test for Miami, and Miami just did a phenomenal job of sealing off perhaps the MVP of the league. We might not know at this point whether or not he'll be awarded the MVP trophy, but at this point, it certainly looked like Antetokounmpo was the best player in the league, along, you know, maybe LeBron James or others. But it was just a really, really great test for Miami, and they passed it with flying colors. As far as the defense, Antetokounmpo himself said after the game, they just make it tough. This Heat is a team that plays hard. They're a team that plays 48 minutes, and that's what they did tonight. It wasn't just tough for me. It was tough for everybody, particularly for you, Antetokounmpo. Sorry about that. No other player really thrived with the exception of Brook Lopez. It almost seemed like that was by design. Lopez was testing his range from the perimeter, but he was also able to get to the rim pretty easily. Finished with 8 of 16 for 21 points. 2 of 4 from 3-point range. Chris Middleton struggled pretty mightily from 3-point range, just 2 of 10 overall. And again, Antetokounmpo with only 13 points, 6 of 18, 33% from the field. And it just, it was such a big win, you know, a 16-point beatdown over the best team in the Eastern Conference. And why I think, you know, this Miami team might have had a chance against the Bucks. I know a lot of people will say, well, back-to-back, etc., but I think there was enough of an eye test here where you could say, look, Miami had knocked off the Bucks twice this season. They had the personnel. This is what the trade, I think, made a lot of sense. This is why you acquire these players like Iguodala and Jay Crowder. It's two more versatile defenders that can do a lot, that can challenge, that can switch, that can make things difficult for a player like Antetokounmpo. We've seen in the past great players change how other teams are built. When you had a team like Michael Jordan, who was a great individual scorer, you had teams like the Detroit Pistons or the New York Knicks challenge them physically, be a little bit tougher defensively, you know, bring in big bodies that could make things difficult for Michael and keep him from getting to the rim. You know, it was the same case with LeBron. It's not necessarily going to work, but I don't think Antetokounmpo is as proven as either Jordan or LeBron James at this point. He hasn't won quite yet. He hasn't established himself as a consistently dominant superstar. But you do what you can to build a team to make things difficult for Antetokounmpo to prevent his ascension to eventually becoming a title winner. And Miami was able to do that by making a trade to acquire versatile defenders, guys that who could, again, switch, be physical, keep Antetokounmpo from getting to the rim easily. And so this was just a really great win for Miami and another opportunity for them to show that maybe they were a legitimate contender to knock off the Bucks. You will never know. Unfortunately, this season seems like it's going to be changed. Even if it resumes, we'll never know exactly what's going to happen. Milwaukee might be a different team. It could have health issues on either side of the ball. But for the Heat, at least, they were able to show the kind of versatility, defensive presence, and again, just enough scoring where they were able to prove to the rest of the league that they were a very, very good team. They shot 49% from 3-point range in this game, 18 of 37, and they needed it. But it was just demoralizing for the Bucks, where they couldn't stop Miami from scoring, and Miami was doing everything they could. I saw some comments from Bucks fans saying, "Oh, they just had a bad night, etc." This wasn't indicative of this team whatsoever. I don't buy it. Miami had already beaten them twice, the only team in the league to do so. So I think that stands out. I think it's worth pointing out. Coming up next, Bam Adebayo has his breakout game of the year. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're in iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. Last of these games, you know, kind of going back at the best moments, best wins of the season. March 8th, 2020, a 180-night win against the Washington Wizards. Why does this stand out? Well, it's the Wizards, not necessarily a quality opponent there. It's also the second to last game of the season up to this point. If Miami does resume playing at some point, then that won't be the case. But for now, it was the last game, the last win of the season for Miami, because the next game they would play against the Charlotte Hornets would wind up being an unexpected loss. But this was against the Wizards with Bradley Beal. This was an opportunity for Miami to kind of get a measure of revenge against a team that had found a way to knock them off just a few months earlier with some unexpectedly hot shooting performances from a number of key role players there. But for Miami, why this game was as a signature moment was Bam Adebayo taking over late in the game, something we had not seen from him at any point in his career. Jimmy Butler would wind up aggravating his toe-foot injury that would keep him out of the last two games of the year. And then Miami was already a little shorthanded, and just trying to find a way to knock off a team that could score a lot of points. They gave up a lot of points also. But for Miami, Bam Adebayo was the key. I can't recall now, and I didn't go back to look at it, but just kind of glossing over why this was such a signature win was Bam's incredible impact. He scored or assisted on every made bucket in the last, I want to say, 6 minutes of the game. It was a statistic I touted a lot at the time, and I don't want to keep drubbing you over the head with this, but and looking back at that game and why it's such an impactful moment in the Heat season was that Adebayo just... Well, he just proved that he could be the kind of player we expect him to be, a dominant one. We hadn't really seen that for him. He can kind of be a little passive at times, not necessarily taking over games offensively, but this was that opportunity where he was just, man, he was just so damn good. It was so exciting to see him just become the kind of player that we knew he could be, where he was just confidently taking his shots, getting to the rim against the bigs in Washington, and then looking to make plays for others and just doing it so consistently. He was the most dominant player in the last 6 minutes of the game, and it really showed, and it really led to a big win for Miami. And so, again, while it was a close game when this started off, it probably shouldn't have been this close, but for Bam, with Jimmy out, he just said, you know what, I'm going to take this opportunity to establish myself, and I just... This is why I included it, not just because it was one of the last big moments of the season, but also because for Adebayo, we're starting to see the shades of what he could be, you know, where he was willing to become the superstar that we expected him to be. Like, you know, his overall game is incredibly impactful. You can break it down to his overall approach, his versatility defensively, offensively, and his, you know, plus minus numbers and everything else. But just there are just some moments that kind of seem a little transcendent where he just takes over games, where individual players can take over games. And for Bam, we had never really seen that. This was one. This was his first. And so kind of looking back at the season, the key moments, what's really stood out, what's been so exciting is just kind of seeing how good this team is. That they're so versatile, that they got such an incredible performances from such a vast number of players, from Jay Crowder, a recent arrival in Miami, to Jimmy Butler, to Tyler Hero, to Goran Dragic, to Bam Adebayo, the two all-stars. But it's just a deep team. Duncan Robinson scoring off the bench. I mean, and not scoring off the bench, but scoring from the perimeter. Myers Leonard having his impact. When Myers, on his most recent interview, said that this was a team that could legitimately contend for a title, it's the past 9 wins that I've talked about over the last few shows that really show that, because they are so resilient, so capable, and so deep. And so this is a team that can do it offensively, that can do it defensively, that has all the pieces in place. And it's been such a fun opportunity for me to kind of just go back and look over these past signature wins over the season there. It seems like a long time ago, but it really wasn't. But still, to think about what could have been, how exciting this season was, and the opportunity perhaps have competed for a championship. Either way, it won't be a lost season exactly. Still a successful one, I think, because it lays the groundwork down for future years and future maneuvers if you're trying to rebuild this roster or retool it around Bam Adebayo and Jimmy Butler. But such an exciting opportunity just to see these big games, these big moments, to remind us all of a much more relaxed and fun version of our lives. But just because basketball is such an important part of our lives, and it was just a good opportunity to just kind of go back and revisit that. But anyway, that's all I've got for today. Thank you for always listening and supporting. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm David O'Mill. Yeah! Crack it up, dude.